So this talk is going to be, most of this workshop is about, you know, very sophisticated graph models. This will be about completely unsophisticated graph models, mostly uniformly random graphs. But what I'm going to look at are, you know, variables attached to the vertices of, you know, this graph that interact in strange ways. So variables may mean colors, and you can always think of this as colors because I will always think of, you know, finite discrete alphabets for, you know, these variables. And the main question, the main theme is, you know, if you define some interaction, how, you know, globally this coloring or this configuration of variable behaves. So how much are they correlated, for instance. And this is mainly based on a paper with Marc Mézard and one recent with Antoine Gerschefeld. So I will, you know, give two introductions. One is to this very much studied problem of reconstruction on trees. And then a second introduction to combinatorial problems of random graphs. And then I will, you know, discuss what is the relation between trees and, you know, random graphs. And first discuss some special cases, and then a kind of general, you know, sufficient condition in the general rule, and I present some open problems that I like in this field. So let me start with the reconstruction problem. So here there are several experts in the audience, but I'll try to explain it from start. So suppose that you have an infinite tree, for instance, a binary symmetric tree, and here I'm not drawing all of it, of course, because it's infinite, and I have three colors, and I want to color this tree with this, the vertices of this tree with three colors. And the rule that I'm gonna use is that I start by coloring the root with a uniformly random color, and then I color each of the, you know, neighbors of the root with some distribution, but independently from the other. So each of these vertices conditional to the root is independent from the others. And then I go up and up and up. And okay, the rule you can create, you know, you can decide your favorite rule, but you can, for instance, choose a simple stochastic rule. That is, I just take a color here that is equal to the color of the previous, you know, vertices of his ancestor with probability 1 minus epsilon, and different from with probability epsilon, and if it is different, it's just a random color. So this event happened with probability 1 minus epsilon, and this with a probability epsilon over 2, because you choose between the red and the yellow with equal probability. The reconstruction problem is, roughly speaking, is given observation on far away, you know, colors, for instance, at the, you know, after 100 generation, can I guess, you know, with the color at the root with probability bounded away from 1 over q. You can always guess with probability 1 exactly equal 1 over q, just uniformly at random, but do I gain any information by being told what are the colors up there?
So excuse me, so you're only allowed to look at the leaves?
Right. So suppose that you have a very, you know, and you are interested, of course, in the asymptotic question. You have a very large tree, and you want to understand whether you get something from the leaf. So to formalize it and to introduce some notation, I'll call I the root, X underline the set of color, the color configuration, that is the color assignments to each vertex of the tree. Mu, the mu in the measure, you know, on X induced by this process. Then I call B the ball of radius, BIR, the ball of radius R around the root, that is the set of, you know, the subgraph induced by vertices that have distance at most R, and B bar its complement. And finally, for any subset U of vertices, the marginal distribution of XU mu U. Is the notation clear? Okay, so formally the question of reconstruction is the following. You want to understand it, look at the joint distribution of the root and whatever it is at distance at least R from the root, and you compare it with the, you know, product of the marginals. Right? And you look at it in total variation distance. And ask whether when you know you look at larger and larger ball, this goes to zero or not. And again, informally, this is the question is, can I guess the root color for from far away observations? Okay, hope it's clear. So I cannot say is it clear, but this is not very informative. This is not very informative. Okay, on the root, this problem is very well, you know, studied. A lot of people have worked on it, and so this is a list of papers. So one, you know, standard for this in model is Evans, Kenyon, Perez, Schulman, then Helkan, and there's a lot of, you know, cases from, you know, the coloring problem to Ising model, etc. James Martin looked at independent set, Brightwell and Winkler independent set, Jennifer and co-workers at the asymmetric chart.
Yes.
That's Chase squared.
Yes.
Yes, well, he put et al. It's
both.
Lincoln Chase et al. It's
yeah.
Fine. Go
maybe
on.
What are Chase bar? Okay.
What's his name first?
Okay. So, but the basic reason for which, you know, on trees you can write a lot of papers is that trees have a very simple recursive structure, right? What is the basic idea beyond all of these papers? You look at, you know, a tree of depth L plus one, a tree of depth R, and consider the conditional distribution of Xi given the value, you know, at the leaves. This is a random variable, okay? But you know, it's very easy to see that you can write a recursion for its law, okay? Simply because you can decompose a tree of depth r plus one into two tree of depth r plus, you know, for instance, in the case of binary tree, and joining that to the root, okay? So this induces a recursion on this, you know, basic object that is the information that I know about the root from the leaves. And then, you know, you can study this recursion in various ways. This can be technically challenging, but you know, this is kind of the main path to follow. So there is, once you it boils down to this, you know, you can also decide it to study it numerically. And you know, from the numerical analysis point of view, this is not enough problem. And these are, for instance, you know, threshold for the problem that I described to you. For various values of Q and of the degree of the tree. And this is you know, what you get numerically for this threshold. So this threshold means that, you know, up to a certain value of epsilon, you are able to get information about the root. And below that value of epsilon, you are not able to get, you know, information about the root. So the reconstruction is solvable for epsilon, you know, in this case larger than this value, and it is not solvable for epsilon smaller. And you know, numerically it's very easy to get it, and these are, you know, these are bounds by Elkanan and Yuval Perez. These are bounds that we found, but most of these bounds are, you know, based essentially on analyzing these or similar recursions. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's also very easy to generalize this problem to random trees. So in this case, you think that, for instance, the tree can have, you know, random degree distribution, random degrees. And so you will have some distribution over the tree, and your distribution mu will be depend on the tree. And you know, a way of generalizing the problem is saying that, you know, the reconstruction problem is solvable if it is, you know, solvable in expectation. That is, if I take the expectation of this total variation and then the limit r to infinity, and then okay, I have to invert the limit. First the limit of the tree to infinity and then r to infinity, this is, you know, positive. Okay. So this has very many nice applications. For instance, Elkanan has studied very much phylogeny, implications of phylogeny, or, you know, but what I want to look at this is a fundamental characterization of correlations among random variables on a graph. So in general, you have a process, you know, a stochastic process on a graph, and you want to understand how correlated are, you know, the variables, the color. And this is a very nice way of describing the problem, formalizing the problem. And if you put it this way, a very natural question is, what if the graph is not a tree? Right? And this talk is about, you know, results in this direction. So how do you define a measure on a graph that is, you know, on colors, for instance, on a graph that is that it's not a tree, where this is very much related to combinatorial problems around the graphs, or you may think of this as discrete stochastic processes around the graphs. So what is the equivalent a bit of my reconstruction problem when I put it on a random graph? Well, it can be the following. Take a graph G with n vertices and n times gamma edges. So I'm thinking of a sparse graph, and take it, you know, a uniformly random such graph. And then, you know, a Q coloring will be an assignment of colors to vertices in such a way that no Q colors to vertices in such a way that no edges, both ends of the same color. And the way of specifying a measure over coloring is taking the uniform measure over Q colorings, okay, of this graph.
Do you condition on your graph being connected?
I can, but I do not, in fact. It's not important. Okay, so, I mean, if it is disconnected, obviously this question, I mean, this question is trivial when you take the radius to infinity. Okay, so, so this is the measure, and it has a nice, you know, Markov structure with respect to the underlying graph. Okay, so this is an example of what I mean by a measure for, you know, colors on a graph. Okay, and this type of measures have been studied very much recently, you know, both in statistical physics and in theoretical computer science, and people have discovered kind of universal pattern for the behavior of this type of measures on random graphs, and in part they've been able to prove this pattern. So what this pattern, I'll take a little detour because it has an interesting connection with reconstruction. So the pattern is the following. I'll give you just the, you know, the intuition that, you know, the structure of this measure mu changes dramatically as gamma, the density of the graph, increases. What does it mean, changes dramatically? Well, for gamma small, the idea is that this measure forms kind of a unique lump with very high conductance. And so it's kind of just one blob. The set of solutions forms just one blob. As you cross a critical value that I denote less gamma d, this decomposes into an exponential number of blobs that are very well separated, in the sense that there is a bottleneck between any of these blobs and these complements. And then there is a second value above which the number of blobs it becomes sub-exponential. And then eventually the problem becomes non-solvable, meaning that a typical random graph cannot be colored with that many vertices, with that many colors. So here Q, the number of colors, is fixed, and what I'm changing is just the number of edges in the graph. And you may understand that as the number of edges increases, it's less and less easy to color the graph. And in fact, that, you know, it's a widespread conjecture that this has a sharp phase transition. Okay,
and
so
in all phases where I see blobs, each blob has exponentially many elements?
Yes. For instance, in this case, it's very easy to show that you have exponentially many elements because in a random graph, because there is always an order n number of, you know, isolated vertices. So once you have, you know, a solution, you can generate one other solution by changing the color of any isolated vertex. Okay, this is typical of random graphs. If you take a bound on the minimum degree, this does not need to be the case. Well, this is a picture that, you know, came up, you know, in a series of mainly statistical physics papers. And people have been able to, you know, give very precise prediction about what are this value of this critical value of Q. And for instance, for large Q, this goes like Q log Q, this goes like 2 Q log Q, etc. And you can compute it for fixed value of Q. So these are, you know, all of these are heuristic calculations, but you know, after they were done, some of it was proved. For instance, in the case of coloring, Akioptas and Naora in 2005 proved that the coloring and coloring threshold goes like two cool little cube. Okay? And there is an important remark here is that the basic tool that has been used in this proof is second moment. Okay? So what does second moment mean? It means that you want to now prove that the graph is typically colorable. So what you compute the expectation of the number of colorings and the expectation of the square of the number of colorings, and you hope that the expectation of the square is approximately the expectation squared. Okay? And when this works, you are very good. Okay? And this is it's interesting because this is a very universal kind of picture, so it's it would be a great theorem to prove this kind of picture that this picture is universal. For instance, another case that has been studied in every detail is k-satisfiability for those of you random k-satisfiability, so it's random Boolean formula. And this has the same phase transition, and you can again compute expansions for the values of the threshold and numerical values for any finite k. And also this has been proved to some extent, the Sutton subthreshold. And also by second moment methods.
Okay.
So the situation is that there is a very clear picture, from an heuristic point of view, and precise prediction for the threshold, and there is some proof of what is, some proof of some good bounds on the sat phase transition.
So in this, so in the one-step replica symmetry breaking, do you conjecture that there's a constant number of clusters or a polynomial number of clusters, or you just know that it's slower than exponential?
The idea should be that if you want to make up the 99% of the measure of the solution, and if you count the number of clusters that are needed for making 99% of the solutions, this is gonna be a random number which is finite with probability 1, converges to a random number.
So it's not on, so it goes from exponential to finite.
Yes. But finite can be, it's unbounded.
In probability,
number, yes.
Kelly,
this is
this question. When you look at these phase transitions, do you look at the order of them to see whether they're discontinuous or continuous?
Well, this is, this is a physicist question. We know everything about this.
It's a physicist answer.
So, okay, from a thermodynamic point of view, this is not a phase transition, in the sense that the free energy is analytic at that point, but it's a dynamical phase transition in the sense that you have a bottleneck in the measure and probably dynamics goes down there. That is, Monte Carlo dynamics goes from polynomial to exponential. This is a thermodynamic phase transition. It is first order in the sense that it is discontinuous in a parameter, in an order parameter, but it is second order in the sense that the first derivative of the free energy is continuous. So this is called a random first order phase transition, and the name was invented by...
And do you see the same behavior in KSAT and in the
yep.
Q-color case?
Yeah. For any k, mm-hmm. at least 4, and q at least 4, I think. Mm-hmm. K3 is a bit different. Okay, so this is a very universal scenario, a very interesting scenario, because it describes a lot of this, behavior, typical behavior of a lot of these measures on random graph. Parts of it have been proved. In particular, there are good bounds on the sat threshold. And now there are some proofs that there are in fact these clusters in fact exist, but there are no good bounds on the clustering threshold. And one very interesting features is that essentially you can look at all physicists' calculations and you can describe them in the following way. If you look at these random graphs, they converge locally to trees, okay? In the sense of Aldous or Benjamin Schramm, etc. Okay, so locally they converge. So a very naive approach would be when I have to do a calculation of some local quantity on the graph, instead of doing it on a graph, I do it on a very big tree. And this is, easy. Okay. So this is the physicist calculation. And so a puzzle is prove that you are allowed to do, such kind of approximation. You can phrase, the converger as proving that the measure converges to some tree measure. So Now I'll come back after this detour. I will come back to I'll come back to reconstruction. And so, what is the reconstruction for these kind of models? Well, here you have a measure mu that depends on the graph, and here again I made an error in inserting the limit. But I made a measure. I have a measure mu on the graph. So this is a measure on the colorings of this graph, and I can look at a vertex I and the joint distribution of, you know, the color at I and whatever it's a distance at least r from I. Okay? And as in the tree, I subtract the product of the marginals. Okay? And I take total variation, and then, you know, you have to read this in reverse. I have first to take the limit of the graph to infinity and then the radius of the point to infinity. The only important detail in the slides, I got it wrong. So in this paper with Marc Mézard, we have this, you know, broad conjecture that, you know, this clustering phase transition, where this cluster, this measure got split into an exponential number of clusters, should correspond to reconstruction on the graph, to reconstruction threshold on the graph, in the sense that where there are clusters, then reconstruction is possible, and where there are not clusters, it is impossible. And that this should correspond to reconstruction on an appropriate tree measure. So this is, was, you know, kind of very daring.
So is this the tree that you get when you do like survey propagation on it, or like Dror White's when he got?
Yeah, no, it's not the same because, okay, it's the tree. Look at any finite neighborhood of any vertex. Okay, this is a random graph.
Yeah.
Take the limit of the graph to infinity. This converges to this is will be a tree with that probability.
Oh, okay, so it's the obvious.
It's the obvious
tree. Okay.
So for instance, in the case of a random, uniformly random graph, this is just a Galton-Watson process with rate,
okay.
You know, gamma.
So possible means, I mean the one step RSB was sort of a phase in the middle. So do you mean by equivalence?
I mean that in this case, you know, on the tree, in this case, reconstruction is possible. In this
and it's
phase.
Not on the left and
not
on the right. And on the right also?
On the right, all on the right is possible. It's not possible all the way on the right, and on the left is not possible. Okay.
So in RS, it's also not possible.
It's up in RS, here is not possible reconstruction, so here there is correlation decay. And here it is possible. It
so
makes sense.
You didn't
sense,
mean
right?
Just in one, you meant it's possible in one RSB, union RSB, union
yeah.
answer.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
So I meant that just the threshold is given by this point. This
okay.
Okay. And this makes sense, you know, intuitively, because as you add, you know, constraint to your measure, these variables become more and more correlated. So reconstructibility is measuring correlation. And it's, you know, reasonable to think that, you know, as the measure gets more correlated, reconstruction becomes possible. But the point is that the threshold is the same as this, you know, clustering of the measure. So, you know, this was a conjecture, and as for all physicists' conjectures, this is false, right? So, and in fact, the first counterexample is due to at least to the best of my knowledge, is due to Herkanen and Dror White's and Warmald, but then, and so this is best to do with independent set on bipartite graphs. But so here I want to look at a canonical counterexample, in the sense that it's for a canonical model that is ferromagnetic Ising model. So what is this? You take, so Jennifer introduced it. You have variables that are 0 or 1, so binary variables. You have a graph, and you measure your measure is product over all the edges of a graph. Of a weight that I call psi, and psi is 1 minus 2 epsilon if, you know, the two vertices take the same value, and epsilon otherwise. Okay, so this measure favors vertices colored in the same way. Okay, and colors can be either black or white. And here I want to look at epsilon smaller than one half. This is what ferromagnetic means. Okay, so this is probably the most standard model in statistical physics. Am I right? So this was studied a long time ago on a tree, on a regular tree, and in 83 that with Senzager Vernier proved that if the tree has degree k plus 1, reconstruction is solvable if and only if k times 1 minus 2 epsilon squared is larger than 1. So there is always this, you know, balance between the degree, you know, at which information spreads out, and the epsilon that is corresponds to the noise somehow. Okay, so now what happens on the graph? So we proved that if you take a uniformly random regular graph of degree k plus 1, so reconstruction is solvable if and only if k times 1 minus 2 epsilon is larger than 1. So the difference here is in the 2, right? So the threshold is not the same. So I had the conjecture and I proved that it's false. And the proof is very similar to what I realized after 2. So the paper by Elhanan was about mixing time, was not about reconstruction, but the two questions are very interestingly related. And the proof is the following. In the case, you know, in which it is not reconstructible, you prove it by uniqueness, and I tell you in a moment what I mean by uniqueness on the tree. And in the other case, what you do, you show that the measure mu decomposes into the convex combination with equal weight of two measures. The measure mu zero that, you know, is, you know, the measure constrained to the number of zeros being larger than the one number of ones, and the measure mu one that is the other, you know, case. And you show that there is a bottleneck between these two parts. Okay? You show that, you know, if this is, you know, under this condition, the two measures are really separated by a desert. Okay? And this, by the way, implies that mixing time is exponential, the bottleneck is exponential. So as for the first direction, what uniqueness means, it means that, you know, if you look at the tree, you can modify the notion, the definition of correlation. Instead of looking at the joint minus the product of the marginals, you can look at the conditional of the root given the boundary minus the marginal and take the max over the boundary condition and then take limit r going to infinity. Okay? If this is zero, I say that uniqueness condition is satisfied, and you can prove that, you know, this is obviously a very strong condition, and, you know, you can apply it like a hammer. Once you have hit, you know, it destroys any correlation with any sorts of graphs. Okay? So, you know, I'm proving that this holds for k 1 minus 2 epsilon smaller than 1 in a tree is very easy. Okay? So, now we have an exception. Can I hope to rescue my conjecture? So now I give you a general.
Can you go back to the results? So the reconstruction. So you say reconstruction is the same as uniqueness?
In this case, yes. The threshold. You said that the threshold is the same as uniqueness. Mm-hmm. Uniqueness gives always an upper bound.
Sure,
right?
But that it's the same sort of.
It's not.
No. Reconstruction up there is actually is Kesten-Stiegler bound. So it's
no. Yes. This is the tree. So in the tree is Kesten-Stiegler. But what we prove here is that if you look at the graph, it's not given by the same, but it's given by the uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is also what happens in independent sets on a bipartite graph. And all of these examples, the basic reason is that there is some sort of simple global ordering. Simple phase transition. Okay, there is no frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you satisfied?
I'm satisfied. I don't quite yet understand.
So it kind of
problem.
Preempts. So are you saying the simple global ordering preempts what would have?
Yeah. So, for example, I'll throw down another conjecture. If you take a paramagnetic easing model and you constrain to the magnetization being at zero,
mm-hmm.
So you have a measure. I conjecture that the reconstruction transition now becomes again the Kesten-Stiegler one. So it's really the ferromagnetic field transition that wipes this out.
Which preempts.
So it's kind of, as always, in physicist conjectures, they are false because of stupid reasons. Okay, so now I give you a general sufficient condition. So the general sufficient condition is based on this object that is, I call the two replica type, and which emerges very naturally in the theory of spin glasses. And what is this? You take, suppose to have to take two IID configurations from your measure view. Okay? So I have two colorings that are, you know, uniformly random colorings on my graph, IID. And now I construct a matrix which is indexed by, you know, pair of colors. So each entry will correspond to blue and red, for instance. And the entry blue and red will be the fraction of vertices in the graph that are blue in the first coloring and red in the second coloring. So this is really the type. So it's 1 over, you know, the number of vertices times the number of vertices that, you know, in the first you know, sample, in the first configuration are blue, and the second configuration are red. Okay. So if it's kind of a distance between two, you know, uniformly random configurations. Mm-hmm. Uniformly, two random configurations. So if mu is uniform, completely uniform, if the graph is empty, then obviously what you have, the mu is equal to the uniform matrix, which is 1 over q squared. This matrix is, you know, has some stochastic sum, all the rows and columns. You know, the sum of all m elements is 1, and the uniform 1 is 1 over q squared. So this case is very easy. And one interesting observation is that if you look now at second moment proofs, the kind of proofs that I explained were very successful for all of these combinatorial problems, they are, you know, more or less are related, are based on proving something about large deviation of these matrix. Because what you do typically is you compute the expectation of the square of the number of colorings, for instance, mm-hmm. and this you decompose the sum over, you know, all pair of colorings of the probability that both, you know, are actual valid colorings, and this is, you know, more or less similar to having some, you know, bounding expectation to, on the large deviations. Okay, so in terms of this, we have a sufficient condition. The sufficient condition is, okay, and I should say that these bounds, essentially, in second moment method, succeed when you're able to prove that this large, you know, nu is very closely concentrated around the uniform. So the theorem that we have is that if this happens, that is, if, and this happens in a very weak sense, that is, if the second moment of this matrix, you know, with respect to the uniform one, goes to zero as the graph goes to infinity, then, you know, the tree reconstruction problem is solvable if and only if the graph reconstruction problem is solvable. So this is, you know, what I claimed, and now I have a condition under which.
Now your condition is on the graph or on the tree? On the graph.
On the graph.
Okay.
Like all of these proofs are, I need something. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are some cases where you have conditions on trees to then conclude something on the graph. Right?
Well,
this Lagrange propagation.
But these are very strong, right? Are always of the uniqueness type.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the folk version of this theorem is, if second moment works, then tree reconstruction is equivalent to graph reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very interesting because this is, you know, tree reconstruction is, I think, is interesting because tree reconstruction has been, you know, a very interesting problem studied in, you know, one group of combinatorics people, and second moment has been, you know, a very interesting tool studied by another group of people. So I should, you know, I stated this theorem, but I should precise the setting. So what is the setting? The setting is that I take G uniformly random, and you can take hypergraphs like in Kissat, but this is, you know, trivial to do. And the measure has this form, and I want all of the potential psi ij to be from some finite collection, for instance, with some taken from some independently from some finite collection with some probability distribution. And in fact, one other observation is that we can prove it in a slightly more general setting. It's not necessary that nu is the uniform one, but it's sufficient that nu can is approximately equal to the product rho x rho y for some rho, so that there exists a deterministic rho such that, you know, in second moment this is true. So now, since I have a sufficient condition, I want to apply it to something. So the first application is kind of a simple deformation of the previous ferromagnetic easing model, and this is the Ising spin class. So I take, you know, here G uniformly random again, and the variables are in 0, 1, and the potentials, so how variables interact, can be of two types, psi plus and psi minus. Psi plus is like the ferromagnetic, so it's 1 minus epsilon if the two variables are equal and epsilon otherwise, and psi minus is just, you know, favors the opposite case.
Okay.
So is epsilon is small if the two, you know, colors are the same as 1 minus epsilon if they are different.
Okay.
So in this way, the idea of this model is that I kill this ferromagnetic transition that was the main origin of the problem with ferromagnetic case. So this is a frustrated model. And, you know, on a tree, the model is equivalent to the ferromagnetic one because you can, you know, turn around all the interaction, change the definitions of the axis. And therefore, you know, in this case, you can apply this theorem of Kenyon, a very general theorem of Peres and Schumann, and say that the reconstruction is solvable if and only if, you know, the average degree, that in this case is 2 gamma times 1 minus 2 epsilon squared, is bigger than 1. So this is essentially the generalization of Blair-Wiltz and Zagrebelio. And on a graph, now using this condition, we can prove that on a uniformly random graph of average degree 2 gamma, reconstruction is solvable if and only if this is bigger than 1. And the reason of the quotation is that, in fact, we don't have the critical case. Okay, so the conjecture is that there shouldn't be these, you know, quote marks, but I didn't want to write all this stuff, but we cannot prove it for the critical case.
Whereas on on the tree, they know it in the critical case.
Yeah, on the tree. So this is what remains open here. And what is the proof? The proof is use the general condition to bring it back to this case. So how do you get the general condition? You have to control this matrix, that in this case is a 2x2 matrix. And in this particular case, there is a very nice theorem by Guerra and Toninelli that you know gives you, you know, a very sharp control of this matrix.
So why does this break down to the k regular graph, where you had k times 1 minus 2 epsilon, not epsilon squared? So why does it break down to the k regular graph?
The difference, okay, I went from the k-regular to this just because of technical reasons, but it breaks down for the reason of the difference is in this, is in that here I'm taking, you know, in the previous example I was taking only ferromagnetic interaction. So, you know, what happens at that phase transition is that all the system orders, and, you know, you can find it either with a lot of zeros and few ones, or a lot of ones and few zeros. While here it cannot be the same order.
So you could do k regular as well.
Does
it work for all distributions as long as the degree is not?
I think the point is that if you want to prove this theorem, one thing that we go about is we take out the graph. How do you prove this? We take out the tree, the small tree, and then we want to prove that the boundary, we can substitute the boundary, which has some weird distribution, with a uniform distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you prove this, it's very helpful to say that these, you know, nodes on the boundary are just as, you know, first of all, that when you take away a subtree from your graph, a subgraph from your graph, the rest is distributed as the original graph. This is true in the uniformly random graph, but in the regular graph, this is not true, because if you take it away, these nodes will have degree smaller. So I think conceptually there is not much, but technically it's a pain. Right? So this is why we prove it for uniform. And this is why. Okay?
But so obviously conjectures that it's true.
I obviously conjecture. I do not fear conjectures.
Do you also conjecture that there's no stupid reason?
Wait, this is deep. Okay, so let's go back to theory. So now the second example is my first example indeed in the talk is colorings or POTS model. So I take now a G uniformly random with average degree 2 gamma, but you know, xi can take 2 Q values, and all the psi, the potentials are uniform, are the same. And you know, they take some value epsilon if the color is the same, and 1 minus epsilon otherwise, okay? Mm-hmm. So in the case epsilon equals 0, this is just the uniform measure of the total colorance of the graph. In epsilon different from 0, I allow some, you know, for some errors here and there. So I allow some, you know, edges to be of the same color, okay? And using this, we can prove that apparently there is not yet any result on trees for this model, or, you know, trees on Poisson graph. There are many results on regular trees, but not on Poisson trees. But anyway, you can prove
this. This result by Nayantara and Recorder and stuff is only for.
Okay, what we can prove here is that for epsilon, for any epsilon positive and any gamma that is essentially below this 2 kilo Q, that is the threshold, essentially the threshold at which the graph becomes uncolorable. Recall that the random graph becomes uncolorable above this. Reconstruction is G solvable, is solvable on the graph if and only if it is solvable in the tree. And the proof is again the general condition plus controlling this new. Now, controlling this new, in this case, we have to use this second moment by the calculation done by Archiliotas and Naor. But this condition is much weaker than Guerra-Toninelli in spin glass. So there is quite some work because you have to bound the free energy. And then they did it only for balanced coloring. Then you have to move from balanced colorings to general colorings, etc. So this requires a few lemmas.
Nayantara Bhatnagar, who's a graduate student, is also. I just want to say her name. That's all.
Yeah, no, thank you. I learned this a few days ago. Eric, not Eric, etc.
Right.
Anyway, apparently there is this recent results on trees again for coloring of tree that says that, you know, the tree reconstruction is solvable if and only if gamma is less than kilo Q. So if you add this to this, this more or less says that it is also solvable in the graph if and only if, you know, 2 gamma is less than kilo Q. And this was, you know, 10 slides ago, this was the same threshold that I had for the clustering transition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this kinds of closes the loop. So what are the conclusions? Conclusions is that even if you have, you know, coming back to these issues of graph, is that you may have a very simple, you know, random graph model, like uniform random graph, but when you start putting variables on the vertices of this can become, you know, very tough problem to study, even if the graph is simple. And the list of, you know, nice open problems is the following. Well, there are, you know, the sufficient condition, there are many examples on which you can apply more or less routinely. For instance, not all equal sat or k sat on regular graphs, etc. What we miss in this coloring case is the epsilon equals 0, that is the real proper colorings. And we have to soften it a little bit. The reason essentially is that to get the result, we need some control on the log of the number of solutions of colorings, and second moment doesn't buy you. Because second moment typically tells you that number of solutions is this with at least probability 1 over 10 or something. So to get epsilon, when you go at epsilon strictly positive, you can use concentration, and which holds trivially.
Mm-hmm.
And
so the same as for these results by Nayantara and Eric, they also need epsilon bigger than 0. Because this all goes to infinity if epsilon goes to 0.
Do they? So they need epsilon bigger than 0?
She showed us the proof.
Maybe they have an even newer version.
But as of about a week ago, she showed us the proof and it seemed to require. So.
Yeah, all of this should, I mean, if there is a big missing tool here that is proving concentration for this type of stuff. That is, take a random KSAT formula, prove concentration of the log of number of solutions. This is something I don't know how to do, and I keep asking mathematicians. And Okay, and there is this
so
general.
So even for even k, you can't use the Garrow method.
No, this is a bound on the number. It's a bound on the expectation, but proof concentration is another. It's an upper bound on the number, so that you cannot prove that with finite probability.
Well, the Garrow for the spin glass was able to prove concentration by proving some subadditivity.
No. This is the limit of the expectation. The limit of the expectation comes from a subadditivity. The concentration at any finite temperature is just plain Lanzmann inequality. The concentration at temperature zero, this is obtained. I mean, this is.
Well, there is the method of conditioning on small substructures. We did it for our second moment in this paper, this twice a moment, right? So sometimes the variance for the numbers come from the fact that we have small loops.
Okay.
Also. So there are techniques which are very hard to deal with this kind of thing.
You mean using second moment plus conditioning?
Plus conditioning on small substructures.
Okay.
If you want to stop it,
okay. But it would be nice to have kind of a simple general. Okay, and. And okay, so the general conjecture more or less is rescued, and it would be very nice to have is that this picture of about the geometric structure of this measure mu that is it decomposes into cluster is related to correlations and more exactly to reconstruction. This is an outstanding problem. That's all.